Good morning, Wisconsin. Good morning, world. Hope the start of the day is treating you right for this April 10th, 2023. Happy Monday, everybody. Got your host, James J. behind the mic. I'm joined by Melissa K.
Good morning, good morning.
Beth Haphagger.
Good morning.
We hope you're having a great start to that Monday out there, everybody. Again, thank you for joining us. It's a Monday. It's 9:04. You know what time it is.
Yeah, it's Monday, April 10th, and we want to open our show today by thanking our sponsors. The Kitchens Open is sponsored by Chatterbox Catering. Chatterbox Catering is a full-service catering company equipped for all your catering needs.
Summer will be here soon, and with that, people like to throw parties outside or even in the garage. If you need a venue, Kathy can even set you up with that. Excellent homemade food is even better enjoyed outdoors. You can take the stress off planning by calling Kathy.
That's right. She can plan the perfect menu wherever your party is located. Just call 715-712-3393, and we'll tell you that number again at the end of the segment.
Mm-hmm.
You guys, I am so excited about today's topic.
I hadn't noticed.
Oh, but you don't even know. Over the weekend, I got to eat tomatoes.
What?
Not just once, but multiple times. I had chili and spaghetti and ketchup. Oh, it's been like more than a decade, you guys.
Wow.
For real. It was just the best.
That's really cool.
Wait a second. Melissa, I thought you couldn't eat tomatoes.
Well, technically I can't. But I had to do an acid test this weekend to test the levels of acid when I eat the things that I usually avoid. If you want to know, it's called a Bravo test. So they insert a small capsule the size of a pencil eraser into your esophagus just above your stomach, and you wear a monitor for 48 hours to record all of the reactions to food and your daily activities.
That's a pretty common procedure for acid reflux or GERD, isn't it?
Yes. Actually, this is the second time in my life I've done it. But last time I didn't eat tomatoes. I was too scared of hurting my vocal cords with the coughing.
You can't be blamed for that, I guess. What changed for this time, though?
Well, the doctor explicitly told me that I should eat the things I wanted to. He said if I want to eat oatmeal for the rest of my life, that's fine, but it's pretty boring.
Mm.
So I got a grapefruit, an orange, I got cereal with cinnamon in it, and I had like chicken sausage with coffee for breakfast, and like I said, so many tomato dishes.
Well, it sounds like that all went out.
Shall we mention Chef Boyardee, or are you going to?
James, shush. We can't all have your upbringing with your Italian grandmother and delicious homemade tomato-based food for every meal. Ravioli in a can is a childhood comfort food for me.
I get that. I'm just teasing you. I know you like that stuff. I don't understand it, but I'll support you and your sad food comfort, if you will.
Thank you. Now, on to what we're actually here to discuss, tomatoes.
That's right, the glorious food that was once called the poison apple.
Yes, that's right. People thought they were poisonous for over 200 years.
Yeah, one of the contributing factors was an Italian herbalist, Pietro Andre Mattelli. He classified the tomato. Oh, I got a thumbs up from James. I must have done that. He classified the tomato as a nightshade and a mandrake in his herbal in the mid-1500s. This category of food is known as an
aphrodisiac.
Thank you. I knew the word. I don't always read well. So aphrodisiac. So we all know what that is, right? But the history of the mandrake actually dates all the way back to the Old Testament. According to the Smithsonian Magazine, it is referenced twice as the Hebrew word dodaim, which roughly translates to love apple. In Genesis, the mandrake was used as a love potion. This caused the tomato, much like the eggplant, to acquire a shady reputation, being both poisonous and a source of temptation.
According to that same article, published on June 18, 2013, Why the Tomato Was Feared in Europe for More Than 200 Years, the publication of Herbal in 1597 by John Gerard really helped cement the tomato's bad reputation. Gerard drew heavily from the agricultural works of Dodonos and Euclius, published in 1553. Most of the information, which was inaccurate to begin with, but was plagiarized by Gerard, a barber surgeon. To quote, Gerard considered the whole plant to be of rank and stinking savor. The fruit was corrupt, which he left to every man's censure. While the leaves and stalk of the tomato plant are toxic, the fruit is not. End quote. So Gerard's opinion, which was based on false information, was the prevailing belief of tomatoes in Britain and the British North American colonies for over 200 years.
Mm-hmm. And another reason tomatoes were feared during that time was that the aristocrats would get sick and die after eating them. But it wasn't the tomatoes' fault, though. It was because wealthy Europeans used pewter plates. These had a high lead content. Since tomatoes have such a high acid content, they would leach lead from the plant, and the aristocrats died from lead poisoning. But without knowing the science behind it, the tomato became the targeted culprit.
Mm-hmm. The tomato also struggled because of its name. Early botanists agreed that the tomato belonged in the Solanaceae family, the same as the toxic nightshade plant. Then in 1692, Joseph Pitton de Tournefort claimed that tomatoes belonged to Solanum, a finer division of the Solanaceae family, because the fruit had more inner divisions than was normal in those plants.
This didn't change the public's opinion surrounding the fruit, though. According to an article on plantnatural.com, Tournefort placed the tomato in a new grouping of plants within the Tolosnace, a classification called Lycopersicone, meaning wolf peach. The Greek term appears to follow an old German word for tomato, Wurfpfirsich, which translates into English as wolf peach. The name Wurfpfirsich referred to the tomato's round shape, reminiscent of a peach, while the wolf modifier derived from the Germanic folk belief that werewolves could be called up using other members of the Solanaceae family, such as the nightshade and wolfsbane.
Another interesting antidote in that article from Plant Natural Research Center, History of Tomatoes, an entirely different theory for why the tomato got off to a rocky start in the U.S. also focuses on names. This time, though, the names involved are the earliest European ones, such as the Italian pomodoro, a golden apple, or the even more evocative French pomme d'amour, love apple. Such names, goes the theory, were hardly of the sort to make Puritans feel at ease with the tomato.
But despite all that, tomatoes grew in popularity, mainly because in the United States at the time wasn't very united, and word traveled slowly. By 1822, hundreds of tomato recipes appeared in local periodicals and newspapers. Fears and rumors still lingered, but people were eating them and not dying a horrible death.
And then came the green tomato worm. It measured 3 to 4 inches in length and had a horn sticking out of its back.
Ew!
It started taking over tomato patches across the state of New York in the 1930s. It was believed that a mere brush with the worm could result in death. Even Ralph Waldo Emerson feared the presence of the tomato-loving worms. They were an object of much terror, it being currently regarded as poisonous and imparting a poisonous quality to the fruit of it should chance to crawl upon. Another doctor of the times claimed that it was as poisonous as a rattlesnake and would throw spittle at its prey.
Oh.
If the spittle came in contact with skin, it would swell up immediately. A few hours later, the victim would seize up and die. It was called a new enemy to human existence.
Fortunately, the entomologist Benjamin Walsh argued the dreaded tomato worm wouldn't hurt a flea. It was found to be harmless. Merely an ugly-looking worm likes to eat the leaves of the tomato plant.
And all of these hysterics are kind of funny when we look at how long tomatoes have been grown wild, cultivated for food, and eaten in the Southern Hemisphere.
It's likely the first tomatoes came from what is known as Peru today. Wild tomatoes can still be found in the Andes. There's a lot of debate about where tomatoes were first raised and exactly how they made their way north to Mexico.
And even more bizarre, the fruit was not introduced to the United States and Canada via Mexico, where it was well established, but by European immigrants. tomatoes really took their long route to get here.
They sure did. There's an interesting article in the Illinois Extension website called The History of Tomatoes, How a Tropical Became a Global Crop. James, do you want to take this one?
Absolutely. Previously, it was believed that tomato domestication began with the cultivation of the blueberry-sized fruits of wild tomato ancestors some 7,000 years ago in South America, like you mentioned, Beth. Mm-hmm. But recent research in genetics indicates that the cherry-sized tomatoes originated in Ecuador around 80,000 years ago,
wow,
without any human domestication. Humans in South America eventually cultivated these early tomatoes, but did not develop the larger fruit size we know today. Over time, these cherry-sized fruits spread northward towards Mesoamerica, either from human movement or by birds or some combination of the natural routes. After the long trek and many, many, many years of persistence as weedy, semi-domesticated plants, their fruits changed significantly to look much more like the smaller wild tomatoes of South America 80,000 years ago. It was the smaller fruited plants that were later domesticated in Mesoamerica around 7,000 years ago into our modern tomato.
It did take a while for the tomato to be regarded as a safe and delicious food to eat, though. Tomato lore claims it got a boost from our founding father, Thomas Jefferson. Although it seems it was actually his daughters and granddaughters who used them in numerous recipes, including gumbo soups. The Jefferson women also pickled them and, in general, promoted their use in cooking.
Hmm. Another story found on PlantNatural.com tells of Colonial Robert Gibbon Johnson in 1830, who set out to eat a basket of tomatoes on the steps of the local courthouse, where a crowd collected to watch him foam at the mouth, twitch, and generally carry on until he finally expired. When he didn't, the legend averes, tomatoes were redeemed and were gradually accepted as food, though preferably in a highly processed form after extended exposure to heat, vinegar, and spices. Tomato ketchup was popular long before tomato salads were.
Mm. Now, how about the fruit versus vegetable question?
I can answer that one. It was decided by the Supreme Court in the late 1800s. Now you can argue that the decision may have been based more on government greed than science, but they decided that the tomato would be classified as a vegetable. Plant Natural Research Center tells us this all came about because in 1887, U.S. tariff laws imposed a 10% duty on vegetables, but none on fruit. A tomato importer named John Nix sued the tax collector for the port at the port of New York, Edward L. Hudden, arguing that tomatoes, since they were really fruits, should be exempt from the tax. Yet in a triumph of ordinary language over scholarly, the highest court in the land ruled in 1893 that the tomato was a vegetable and therefore subject to the tariff. In his decision, Justice Gray wrote, botanically speaking, tomatoes are fruits of a vine, just as cucumbers, squashes, beans, and peas. But in the common language of the people, all these are vegetables, which, whether eaten, cooked, or raw, are usually served at dinner in, with, or without the soup, fish, or meats, which can constitute the principal parts of the repast, and not, like fruits, generally as dessert.
But botanically speaking, tomatoes are a fruit. And if we can take that a step further to clarify that tomatoes are technically a berry.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Berries are red, berries are blue. Botany, you're strange. I don't get you.
It's true. A fruit is the fleshy part of a flowering plant that holds or encases the seed or seeds. The botanical definition of a berry is a fleshy fruit produced from a single flower and containing one ovary. You know what else is technically considered a berry?
What?
Cucumbers and eggplant.
Well, now you're just getting into weird science. Let's get to the recipes.
Good idea.
So the spaghetti sauce that I made this weekend is one I've made 1,000 times before I decided to cut tomatoes out of my diet for what I thought were health reasons. We'll see what the doctor decides. Mm. I never follow a recipe, and I use tomato sauce or spaghetti sauce from a jar. So judge away, James. It's okay. it starts with lots of diced onions, garlic, and peppers. I used a yellow pepper this time. I saute those up a little bit before I add the ground hamburger and salt and pepper. After the hamburger is cooked, I remove as much of the grease as possible before adding stewed tomatoes and a jar of spaghetti sauce. That simmered while I finished up my noodles and my garlic bread, and it was so good, just like I remembered it.
Yay! See, for me, one of my favorite things to do with a tomato is make my homemade bruschetta. Mm. So, yeah, it's so good. So I use a little bit of minced garlic, and that's to taste. So you add that to the bowl, and you cube up a tomato. Put that into the bowl, add some Italian spices, maybe a little garlic salt, a little bit of salt and pepper for taste, and then you mix it all up in a little bit of olive oil.
Mm. Ooh.
Put in a couple pieces of toast and then spread it on top of the toast, and oh, it tastes so good.
Mm. That
I
is
bet
good.
It's even better with a garden fresh tomato.
Oh, yes.
Nothing beats that.
Absolutely.
I encourage people to try what we called as kids growing up burst pasta.
Ooh.
But the technical burst cherry tomato pasta is what it was referred to. It only takes like 20 minutes to make. It's very simple. And I encourage you to go online, look it up, how you do it, because I come from an Italian household, and we don't write instructions down. We just remember it, or we use a pinch of this, a little of that, or whatever. I do have to add in here, though, my favorite snack growing up was basically tomatoes. It was just in marinara. I get my Nana's marinara sauce. I get a loaf of like French bread or Italian bread, and I just go to town.
Yeah.
I'd finish that whole loaf of bread just dipping into that marinara and eating it.
Mm-hmm.
God, I can taste it right now.
Well, and perhaps another travesty to the tomato sauce in some people's opinion. I was going to make my leftover spaghetti sauce into chili for my lunch on Saturday. But my boyfriend liked the spaghetti sauce so much, he's like, don't do that. We'll go buy more stuff and you can make chili just from scratch so that I can have the rest of the tomatoes and the spaghetti sauce.
Well done.
But yeah, so I had to run to the store again and get, and he came with me, you know, to his credit.
Mm-hmm.
But chili is just so easy to make. You start I start the same as I do with my spaghetti sauce and chop up lots of peppers. I got a jalapeno pepper, a paella pepper, green and red peppers, and lots of garlic. Saute that up, throw in your hamburger, and then lots of beans. I got chili beans, jalapeno pinto beans with bacon in them, kidney beans, and then lots more stewed and diced tomatoes, tomato sauce. I've even put in a little bit of tomato paste, and then, of course, all of the spices. Lots of chili powder, a little cumin. And then you simmer it until everything's done and enjoy every bite. And my boyfriend gets to eat the leftovers of that all week, too.
Oh, yum. I like to make chili, but I do it with a ground turkey rather than the beef to make it a little bit healthier. Mm-hmm. And then instead of using water, I add some turkey broth. And love getting the diced tomatoes in a can that actually have some garlic and oregano seasoning in there.
Mm-hmm.
And you throw that in there with it, too. And I like to substitute white pepper in my recipe for some of the chili pepper, because I don't do a lot of the jalapeno and the spicier, so this makes it gets it a little bit of that heat without making it too spicy.
Mm-hmm.
And also the flavor too then.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, white pepper is an interesting spice, and it's useful in a lot of different ways. So the only thing that I didn't make this weekend that I really wanted to was my mom's lasagna. But I wasn't about to add my lactose issue into the mix, one thing at a time.
Mm-hmm.
The suffering was for science. but like all experiments, it needs to be precise.
Right.
So maybe after I meet with my doc, I'll be able to have that dish down the road.
Well, here's hoping that this gives you some relief and allows you to start to do that again. Because tomatoes are delicious and nutritious, however you make them. There's so many recipes we could talk about for the rest of this hour if we wanted to.
Mm-hmm. Very true. And I didn't even get a chance to talk about the time that I was Rosie Montefalco on the stage. I owned a meatball stand, and you could buy my meatballs, but but we don't have time for that. So
no, no.
It's time to thank our sponsors, Chatterbox Catering, for the support of our Kitchens Open segment.
If you have catering needs, contact Kathy at Chatterbox, and she will find you the perfect menu for your party. I'll bet Kathy makes a mean meatball, and she has the most delicious sauces. I'm sure her spaghetti is one that will make memories.
Mm-hmm. Whatever your catering needs or wants, contact Kathy at 715-712-3393 and let Chatterbox Catering cook up something good. And with that, we'll close the kitchen.
We'll have another episode of The Kitchens Open next Monday at 9:04. Meet us here, everybody. When we come back, we got some entertainment news for you on The Morning Show at WFHR. Welcome back to The Morning Show here at WFHR, locally grown radio. Melissa, Beth, and James here with you. Has some entertainment news. We're actually going to do this in two parts. We've only got a little bit left in this segment. We'll get to Melissa's news, and then we'll come back and wrap up our entertainment conversation. But I had to get to this, and I could have actually started the show with this. Dolly Parton's Imagination Library program in Pittsburgh might close due to a lack of funds.
No.
The program gives kids 5 years old and under a book of their choice. It requires around $8,000 a month from local donations to operate. Her Dollywood Foundation covers overhead costs, but local groups have to pay for postage and wholesale book prices. Since its launch in 1995, the program has distributed more than 200 million books to children at no cost.
Wow.
You hear Terry and I talk about this all the time. It is a big part of Women United and, of course, something that the United Way promotes quite a bit.
Right.
And I can't think of a bigger That Ain't Right story. Like, this can't happen. We just can't let this happen, Pittsburgh. I know I've never been to Pittsburgh, never spent a moment in my life there or anything, but I'm asking you people in Pittsburgh, make this, you know, get this done. Make this happen.
Well, we talk about how important early literacy and reading skills are for children. And this is something that gets books in children's hands directly to them. They don't have to go anywhere to get them. I think it's a vital and important thing.
When I first started doing Morning Magazine and interviewing so many of our people that work in nonprofits, I started to really realize, man, how much nonprofits do in this area.
Right.
I had no idea. I thought I had an idea, but I truly did not. Mm-hmm. And so after a couple months of it and everything, and we're, you know, not too long after that, a pandemic happens and stuff, I'm trying to think, well, donation, people cringe at the word donation sometimes, or they don't, you know, hear it sometimes, or, you know, what can we get people to help and all that? And investment.
Yep.
People like making investments.
Yeah.
People believe in investments. That's what you're doing.
Yeah.
That's what you're doing. You spend money on something like this, you're helping kids read. Spoiler alert, they're the future.
Yeah.
So if they can read better, it means our future might be a little bit better, which means it may be a little stronger, a better economy, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. This is an investment. It's not, you're not wasting money. You're not donating money so much as you are making an investment. Make an investment in our kids. Mm-hmm. I should not have to stress this. We're already a country who can't protect them. Can we at least make sure they can read? Can we make sure at least that they have books and stuff?
I'm inclined to say let's create a write-in campaign to all of the professional sports teams that are in Pittsburgh and encourage them to make up that difference to make sure that this program does not end in that city.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a great idea.
That's a good idea.
Yeah, that's a really good idea. I also know that public pressure helps.
Mm-hmm.
So that's part of the reason we're talking about this. And, well, why are you talking about this? Well, I found out recently we have some listeners in the Pennsylvania area.
Go.
So I want to make sure that we're touching on these stories and everything. And I don't want to make light of this. I understand that this, you know, if I'm a Pittsburgh business or something and I'm like, hey, I struggle. I can't do this. I can't whatever. Maybe you can bring awareness to this subject and help maybe there's a business who hasn't heard of it that can help.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So greatly encourage you to and the people in the greater Pittsburgh area and everything. If you can be a part of this in any way, appreciate you doing it, whether it's bringing attention to the subject and bringing support to it, or if it is you know, an investment.
Mm-hmm.
We greatly appreciate that.
Absolutely.
Keep up the great work, all the people that are helping with those too, the volunteers, all the different people that help get those books out, the people that donate books, you know, all that stuff.
Yes.
And speaking of books, we have the United Way has their book drive going on right
now. Absolutely, yep.
You can donate your books until the 28th of April.
I was going to wrap up with that. I had it all lined up.
So as you're spring cleaning, find those books that are gently used,
James.
Yes, please do, everybody. Join them for their great book giveaway. This is going on. Actually, the Great Book Giveaway is going on right now. You can drop off book donations at the United Way offices at 351 Oak Street in Wisconsin Rapids. You can do that up until the 28th, I believe. Yes, up until the 28th. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And Terry will be in with us later this week, I believe, and we'll talk a little bit more about that, of course.
Mm-hmm.
But uwswac.org, that is the website of the United Way. You can bookmark that and find out more about this stuff and plenty more. You can also always call 211 and encourage you to follow the United Way on social media.
Yes.
For now, let's get to Melissa's news. We'll come back with some entertainment stuff, a Daddy Wright story, good stories of the day, all coming up on The Morning Show here at WFHR, where we are locally grown radio. Welcome back, everybody. Morning Show here at WFHR, locally grown radio. Melissa, Beth, and James here with you, being joined by Sarah McLaughlin.
Come out at night, that's when the energy comes.
One of my favorite voices of all time. Easily top 20 voices of all time. Love Sarah McLaughlin. Great songwriter.
Yes.
Really. Sweet Possession, I think it is. I haven't listened to her in a while, actually, to be honest. But gotta love her voice. Mm-hmm. Great songwriter. Got a little bit more entertainment news wanted to touch on here. The Super Mario Brothers movie had a big weekend. Did you guys go see it?
No, we had thought about going yesterday, and I was too exhausted. So we're planning this coming weekend.
Well, they did okay without you.
They did, apparently.
It made $377 million worldwide in ticket sales.
It made
$204.6 million at the domestic box office, plus $173 million overseas. It's also the biggest opening of 2023 so far, and the top opening for a video game adaptation. Sonic the Hedgehog 2 previously held the spot with $71
million. Mm-hmm.
In related news, Jack Black, who is the voice of Bowser, released a music video for his ballad Peaches, in which Bowser confesses his love to Princess Peach.
Aww.
I realized this weekend, one of the things that makes Jack Black so good and so funny at what he does is that he can sing.
Yeah.
If Jack Black had never acted and never, you know, wasn't a comedian or anything like that and just became a singer, nobody would be surprised.
Mm-hmm.
Or, I mean, if he had never had that career and then went into acting after music, like that would be a surprise.
Right.
But it's because he can sing so well and he's so, like, has such good control of his voice that when he does these parody songs or silly songs or any of the work with Tenacious D or anything like that, it hits that much better.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's funny. I also would like to warn the audience that if you are tired of superhero movies, oh, wait.
Yeah.
Because the video game renaissance is coming.
Yep.
After every studio executive saw what we just talked about, and every single one of them spent this morning, and probably still are doing it right now because I'm talking about LA Times and everything. What's a video game? Give me video games. Mm-hmm. Go. Give me a video game. Let's do it. Let's make it. We don't need a script. Just go.
Yep.
And they're making these movies, like with the amount of because this movie, you notice the cast that it had, Chris Pratt, Charlie Day, you've got all these big name actors. They can do that because these movies are a lot easier to do. You don't have to pay for location fees.
Right.
You don't have to pay for a caterer. You know, any of these things. Scheduling wise, I can record Chris Pratt's voice work when his schedule is open. But his schedule may be open at a different time than somebody else's. So there's no hold up in making the movie. I can do this whenever I want. I can get all these things recorded and everything. So it is the film equivalent of reality TV, animated films.
Mm-hmm.
Reality TV, that's not going anywhere. And in fact, you're probably going to see even more of it going forward because networks don't want to spend money on sitcoms anymore. They don't want to pay writers. They don't want to pay directors and all this. So they just have reality TV out there, which has been great. That's wonderful. this is going to be really interesting to see the video game thing happen. And I can't wait until they get to like Joust, or Pitfall, or like because there's going to be bad ones.
Right.
And that's what I'm waiting for, is the bad ones. They made Battleship. They made Battleship into a board game. The board game Battleship, they made it to a movie.
Just about anything you can make into a movie nowadays.
It's coming.
And it'll be interesting to see what they do, because they've tried to do Mario as a live action, and I found it. I like it because I like John Leguizamo. I thought he did a great job.
One of my favorites.
With Bob Hoskins. I mean, I thought it was a cute movie, but it did not do well in the box office. And so they shifted it to be a 3D animation, a computer animated thing, and it has taken off. And then the Sonic movies are a blend. It's more live action than it is the 3D animation. So it'll be interesting to see what direction it really goes.
Mm-hmm. Growing up, they would play the Popeye movie on WGN all the time. And being the diehard Robin Williams fan
I
am,
I loved that movie.
I grew up loving that movie too. And then as I got older and I'm reading about Robin Williams and all this stuff and everything, and they're saying how he was fortunate in his career to rebound from an early flop. And I'm reading and it's Popeye. And I'm like, wait a minute, what? Popeye was a flop? What? No way. And Shelley Duvall. I mean, you will never cast olive oil better than Shelley Duvall.
Yes.
Like, as great as Robin was, she was even better. That's saying something to me. So I don't know. I like the movie. And I think that when it comes to, flops and not flops, it's all, hereditary. It's just what matters is the people that are losing jobs. I'm sure it matters more to them.
Well, and I wonder if this is going to be a shift, because we've seen so many superhero movies from the comic books and all of that.
Yeah.
If now we're going to find that that's going to ease up more, and we're not going to see as many of those, and we're going to see more of these video games coming to the screen.
We have seen that fade.
If we're talking about... Oh, sorry. Go ahead, James.
No, I was just going to say that we have seen the superhero movies fade a little bit in box office numbers.
But if they're moving on to video games, but you also mentioned Battleship. They could move on to board games, because there are, think about Settlers of Catan. there are so many board games that are so in-depth. Merchants and Marauders, I have one, and it's merchant ships and pirate ships, and there's so many board games that have such intricate storylines and things of that nature. So that could maybe be the next big thing.
Yeah. It's just so long as it's not Hungry Hungry Hippo.
They've got a game, Warhammer 4K, that is huge. It's a board game. You can make your characters and all this stuff and everything. They're turning that into a movie. Henry Cavill is going to be starring in it.
Well, and Dungeons & Dragons is now out.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, and that actually did really well, too.
Yeah.
That was cool to see, I thought. Melissa, you're so right about this. It's more and more happening. What I'm excited about, I guess I could bring this up. I it's well enough. I'll tell you guys. I been trying to get in the Writers Guild, so I'm working on a script for War, where it's just the card game War, and it's just two people playing the card game War, and it's fascinating. It's a real page turner.
Yeah,
it's really something.
Yeah,
it is. If that doesn't work out, I've got one about Pong.
Oh, there we go.
It's just, it's just again two actors just battling back and forth.
Nice.
Those may not do well, but these probably will. The Skywalker saga is not over.
Ooh.
Not when there's more money to be made by Disney. Yes. Mm-hmm. During a Star Wars celebration event in London on Friday, Lucasfilms announced that there's a new movie in the works featuring the return of Daisy Ridley as Rey.
Yay.
Nice.
That, happy birthday to Daisy Ridley, too.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
There are actually three movies being planned, but it sounds like all movies are unrelated. So they're not necessarily a trilogy. They're just three separate movies.
Okay.
Disney's movie, Daisy's movie, takes place 15 years after her trilogy, where she's working to rebuild the Jedi Order. Another one will take place during the New Republic era, so that's like the beginning of the Jedis, first days of the Jedi. And then there's one about that's going to tie in The Mandalorian, the Book of Boba Fett, and Ahsoka, can't think of the Rosario Dawson one. So that's going to tie all those together. All those sound interesting. I'm more excited about the project Daisy's a part of because they're finally being brave about this. Like, tell a new story.
Yeah.
It's so easy to tell these stories from the past. And there's plenty of them that are interesting and awesome and all that. And I watch all of them. I'm not going to lie. Mm-hmm. But I'm so tired of the old stories. I want to see something new. Give us something new. Push the envelope. Give it, you know, try here a little bit. And they're finally doing it. I think that's really cool.
Yeah.
I don't know how it's going to turn out, but, you know, I'm just excited that they're at least making the attempt. I do hope that people can understand that, too. I understand how fan bases could be, but have a little grace with it whenever they do come out. And if you don't like it, be appreciative that, hey, at least we got new Star Wars stuff.
Right.
Yeah. Seth and I grew up just begging for anything to happen and all that stuff. Like, I'd be excited about that.
Yeah.
This week on Director's Cut, Seth and I are going to be tag team in a couple of things together. It'll just be him and I. And one of the things we're going to talk about these new Star Wars movies coming out. Yeah. We'll get more in depth into it then. I did want to wrap up as we are getting ready to get into our That Ain't Right stories and good stories of the day. I want to wrap up with a good story, and it has a little bit of entertainment news in it. Actually, I think we just brought up this guy last week. Starring in the movie Babe almost 30 years ago made James Cromwell a vegan and helped inspire him to animal activism. And at 83, he is still at it.
Good for him.
Last week, Cromwell heard the story of a pig that fell off a truck on the way to get fattened for slaughter. So he and PETA are transferring it to an animal shelter in Pennsylvania, where it will not be eaten. They even named the pig Babe.
Aww.
And here's maybe the best part. James FaceTimed the pig and said he looks forward to meeting him in person. He ended the call with a, "That'll do, pig."
Aww.
Just to make this story absolutely perfect.
Yeah.
Is your heart warm? Because mine is.
Aww.
By the way, James Cromwell, looking good, sir. Yeah. Looking good.
Oh, and it's a piglet.
Yeah, it's a little piglet. Yeah.
I was thinking full-grown pig that they were taking to fatten even up. But no, this is just a cute little piglet.
Mm. James Cromwell, one of my favorite character actors of all time.
Yes.
Such a good, strong actor. Mm-hmm. When Babe came out and he got that notoriety from it and everything, I couldn't have been happier for him. I don't remember the movie that well, but I remember really enjoying his performance, wondering if the people at Charlotte's Web got any lawsuits going or anything, and a couple of other things. But I've been very happy to see his career going the way it is. And at 83, sir, you look good. Mm-hmm. You look good, yeah. James Cromwell.
No, he's doing great. That was an awesome movie. I love the mice singing.
Yes.
Oh, I forgot about
duck,
that.
The duck that thought he was a rooster.
Mm-hmm.
That's
a very cute movie. It is a cute movie.
I think that could make a good movie on its own. A duck that thinks it's a rooster.
Yeah.
I think that would make a good movie all on its own.
There's the sequel.
We are going to take a break. We're going to come back and get into some more fun here on The Morning Show at WFHR, where we are locally grown radio. Welcome back, everybody. Morning show here at WFHR, locally grown radio. I love Duran Duran.
Yes.
Welcome back. Melissa, Beth, and James here with you. Time to get into some That Ain't Right stuff. We'll get into some good stories of the day in just a little bit, give you that palate cleanser. We go to Plainfield, Connecticut. We don't go to Connecticut for many Denny Wright stories.
Mm-mm.
Connecticut police officers didn't have far to go to arrest a suspected intoxicated driver. A 30-year-old man managed to crash his car into the Plainfield Police Department's entrance sign Monday afternoon. The man was traveling at a high rate of speed and lost control of the Honda Accord, which careened off the road and slammed into the sign, police said. A photo of the crash scene showed the damaged silver sedan resting amid a pile of concrete blocks from the base of the sign and the busted sign itself. The driver, who police said did not perform a field sobriety test to standard, was charged with traveling too fast, failing to maintain the proper lane, operating under the influence of drugs or alcohol, and just being a knucklehead.
Mm-hmm.
He was released on a $10,000 bond.
Wow.
Here,
charge me.
yeah, right.
Let me deliver myself to you guys.
Yes.
I know I'm over the limit.
Look, we've got DoorDash. We've got all these other things that we don't have to leave our homes for anything anymore. Shouldn't our officers have
exactly.
something like that? I mean, it can't be every crime, of course, but, you know, every once in a while, it would be nice if criminals delivered themselves.
Let me help you meet your quota.
Yes, yes. I mean, is that asking too much? Is it as silly as that sounds, half the time these crimes these people commit is just as silly. So doesn't it seem to make just as much sense? Like, I really like the more and more of these stories we do, the more if I ran a police department, I'd be tempted to like have a day every year where I was like, turn yourself in day. Hey, everybody, today's the day. Turn yourself in. Got an extended warrant? Come on in. We'll take care of it for you. Like, I believe that you'd get it like one or two people who would show up just thinking like, whoa, what's this going on? Like, this seems like it sounds like a party. It's all in the presentation. It's all in how you say it. It's like with the dog. We're going to the vet. We're going to the vet, buddy. We're going to the vet. Like, if you get excited about it, they get excited too. They don't know what vet means. They're just excited because you're excited. Apparently, criminals have just as much brain power. So,
well, when they say you'll take care of it, they didn't say how.
Right into the sign. Couldn't have. I mean, he might as well have, like, the only thing that he could have done to do this even, like, is, like as the officers were coming out there to get him, like, he's already handcuffed. In his hand, he's got his fingerprints. Yep. Like, he's all ready to go. Like, he's even got a number already. Like, he's already numbered.
His breathalyzer results.
So I just wanted to make this a lot easier on you guys. You work really hard. Yeah. So here you go. Good stories. We need good stories.
Yes, we do.
Let's get into it. A dog in the UK just got sober. He's a 2-year-old lab mix named Coco. His old owner let him drink alcohol to the point that he got physically hooked on it. He went through alcohol withdrawal, and it took about a month for vets to wean him off. But he's doing better now and should go up for adoption soon.
Oh, poor thing.
Don't feed your animals alcohol.
No.
It's animal abuse.
Yeah.
And the way things affect you is not how it is going to affect them.
Exactly.
It is equivalent to giving alcohol to a child.
Yeah.
It is no different. Like, and look, I've had a dog, I've had a cat drink the foam off my beer before and stuff. I'm not saying I'm perfect about this, but I had to learn, hey, that's not cool. It doesn't affect them the same as affects us.
Different processing.
And if you leave these things unattended laying around, any animal or child or what, who knows, could get into it.
Yeah.
A new poll found 41% of Americans are now registered organ donors.
Yay.
Wow.
39% of people in the poll said that they personally know someone who has received an organ.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
That's pretty darn cool.
Yeah.
Two grandmas from Texas just went around the world in 80 days at the age of 80.
I love it.
That's awesome.
Way to go, grannies.
Their names are Sandy Hazelip and Ellie Hembry. Actually, they're 81. They plan to do it. They planned to do it at 80 as a nod to the Jules Verne novel, but the pandemic delayed it a year. They've been best friends for decades and started traveling together after their husbands passed away.
Wow!
In less than 3 months, they hit 18 countries on all 17 continents.
Wow!
They even fit in a hot air balloon ride in Egypt as another nod to the book.
Good for them. They say
I thought that was neat.
God, I can't imagine. They say they didn't plan a vacation. They planned an adventure.
Now that should be turned into a movie.
Yeah. I'm with you there. Yeah. make it a sequel from the 80 for Brady or
there
whatever.
You go.
Make it a sequel to that. I love this story. Man, I want more of those. I want more stories like that. That is a pretty cool one. And I like the idea of that. Not planning a vacation, planning an adventure.
Yes.
That's a cool idea. I like that. Wanted to spend a moment on this one. This article comes to us from Joe Tarr out of the Wisconsin Public Radio. Shout out to them. You can find the article, if you'd like, at WPR.org. And again, thank you to Joe Tarr. When an Australian man noticed a frog living in a fence in his yard, he decided to be a good neighbor by building the critter a tiny house. His TikTok video of his efforts quickly went viral and led to a new business selling 3D printed frog homes.
Okay.
Wildlife biologist Aaron Saar wasn't at all surprised the video resonated with millions of people. Frogs are cool, if not unappreciated. She recently told Wisconsin Public Radio that they come in all these different shapes and sizes. They make all these funny sounds, and it's really nice to go out on walks in the evening and hear them singing. Mm-hmm. I think that they just bring people happiness with the complexity of life and their life cycle. Sauter is a postdoctoral researcher in biological sciences in the University of Arkansas. She previously studied how frogs and other amphibians thrive or struggle in ponds around Madison. She talked about threats facing amphibians and why frogs are important and how building frog houses or ponds can help them survive in urban areas, which can be harsh environments for them.
Oh.
This is these little frog homes are not just cute and kind of cool and everything, mm-hmm. but they're kind of necessary.
It sounds like that. Yeah.
And who should be paying for these? Well, us. Because we took their land.
Yeah.
We messed this up for them. We're the reason that the homes are you know, not as much in prevalent anymore. Mm-hmm. And frogs are very important to our ecosystem.
Absolutely.
Amphibians are the most threatened vertebrates on the planet. Again, amphibians are the most threatened vertebrates on the planet, more than fish, reptiles, birds, and mammals. One endangered species in Wisconsin is the Blatchard's cricket frog. Some salamanders are rare of special are a concern as well. A big problem is habitat destruction. If there's no habitat, then you can't have a population, and it's going to go locally extinct.
Mm-hmm.
We don't want this to happen,
no,
right?
We don't.
I mean, please raise your hands if you want frogs to go extinct or something, because I'm guessing we're all pretty much on the same page of this one. These little homes help that. They give the frogs, they handle winter, they handle all the seasons, mm-hmm. they give them some more environment.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Did you guys hear about the DNR conservation program that you can volunteer for and listen for frogs in our state? We have 12 frog and toad species in Wisconsin, and they get volunteers to help listen to know how many frogs are in all of these different areas throughout the state and to track their population and try to help them.
It's so cool.
That's
I did
awesome.
See about that. I'm
so
showing.
You just type in frog DNR frog and toad. It'll pop right up.
Okay.
Showing Beth a little picture of the little home for the frog. It's got a little it looks like a little home. Actually, it looks like a little walk-in, like a fast food place or something like that.
All right, maybe this is in poor taste, but is it going to come out of that going, hello, my baby, hello,
yes,
my honey,
yes,
hello,
nice.
My ragtime gal.
Hello, my baby, hello, my ragtime gal. Oh, yes, that was great. That was funny. That was good. I like that.
You.
We are going to get out of here for now, but we got more morning show for you tomorrow. Melissa and I are going to hang out, going to have some fun, and we are going to welcome in Terry Hummus. She is with the Central Wisconsin Gift of Life. She's going to join us in the 9 o'clock hour. We're looking forward to talking mm-hmm. with Terry. Got some awesome. Fun stuff lined up for you tomorrow. For now, we hope both of you have a great day. Thank you so much for the fun times this morning. Melissa, Beth, hope you guys have a good one.
Thanks, you too, James.
You too, James.
Feel better.
Thank you. And stick around for Playmakers. Randy, Paul, and I got Playmakers coming up for you. It's your sports call-in show. Get your sports thoughts, feelings ready. Get ready to call 424-2600 and join us here at WFHR locally. Well, actually, you know what, Beth? I like the way you do this.
All right. WFHR Wisconsin Rapids, 1320 AM and W248DE, broadcasting at 97.5 FM.